Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Alex McCarthy's Wrestling Daily right here on the Wrestling Daily YouTube channel. It is Wednesday and that means the Daily Boy is right beside me, SP3. What is going on, brother?
It is Wednesday and it is a good day to be here with the Daily Boys. It is debate night on Wrestling Daily with a pre-show before a huge Quizzlemania. So it's a lot of great things going on YouTube today. And I'm happy to be here with my brother from an Irish mother and talk a little wrestling.
There it is. The Irish nurse coursing through my veins. SP3, always a pleasure, man. And well done. Good job. I was able to catch half an hour of the Monday show today on my commute into work, and I richly enjoyed it. Sat is a crazy man, but I enjoyed it for sure. Very good. Very good to add that to the rotation. We were talking about this yesterday. I think it's awesome that the co-host here can do more. That's what Wrestling Daily is all about. So I'm very glad it's been well received. Thank you very much, guys, for tuning in. Make sure you check it out every Monday now. Moving forward, I might drop in every now and again. But yes, that's the idea, that everyone's going to get their own chances on this channel. Speaking of which, some of you good eggs out there had some chances here on the phone in yesterday. Very good show. Thank you very much again. But today is debate day. We're going to get into the news in a minute. We're going to then talk a little bit about NXT, Pete Dunne and Dragunov are good. And then obviously we're going to do a little bit of our debate too. So, without further ado, anyone who's here right now, I'm going to say this periodically. Thumbs up, please, on the video. Give us that subscribe button. We appreciate your custom. So thank you very much in advance for your support. And to all the good eggs I can see in the chat already, Dion Chua, who was in the call-in yesterday, SB3. He was spitting facts from his cold Antarctic bedroom. No doubt about it. CM Chris in the house as well. I will say this, guys. If you want to dictate this show at any point, you know you can do that by wrestletalk.com/wrestlingdaily. I love the Ultra Chats, my favorite part of the show, when you guys get to have your say. And I think one of my favorite things is when you have hot takes. If you have hot takes, get them out of the oven and give them to us. I would love to hear what you guys have got to say and then let SV3 and I tee off on all of your fine takes. So, without further ado, let's address the title of this video, SP3, because once I was told what the title was, I wasn't best pleased because not only do I not think it's a solid, what I would call quote-unquote report, it's also a given, right? Of course WWE, are going to want to have him back. I assume they've made overtures, but just break it down for us what you've seen.
Well, this came from basically a poll or a Q&A answer, question and answer from PW Insider when asked about what is WWE's thoughts on Daniel Bryan potentially going to AEW. And PW Insider answered that WWE still wants to re-sign Daniel Bryan before he heads over to AEW. And like you said, when I saw this report and I looked a little bit more into it, I was just like, Yeah, I mean, this is a no-brainer. I don't think that you need a source in WWE to kind of get to know it. I mean, they've been very adamant as far as CM Punk, from what we've been hearing. from CM Punk, they've been like, you know, they're over that. They don't want to have CM Punk. They went through their issues with him. He has a lot of bad feelings towards them. They apparently have a lot of bad feelings toward him. It's not a mutual working situation, whereas Daniel Bryan was in the main event of WrestleMania. And he was given a very good send-off in his final matchup against Roman Reigns on the April 30th SmackDown episode. I would say really a top three WWE TV match of the year when he lost his Loser Leaves SmackDown match. So it is almost a given that, yes, WWE wants Daniel Bryan. WWE doesn't want Daniel Bryan to go to AEW, but It's a good talking point, as it will, because, you know, the Daniel Bryan talks are gonna be cooled for a while until he eventually does show up on AEW, if he eventually shows up on AEW. So I guess it's like a good topic for us to discuss here.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting at this point as well, the PW Q&A wasn't even Mike Johnson. It was Dave Shearer. Well, I don't know how you pronounce that. It was Shearer. So even that, I take less. You know, I think it was just him answering what he thought rather than reporting. Because I feel like if WWE were in active talks with Daniel Bryan, that would be actual report headline news. Yeah. You know, they've obviously made offers to Daniel Bryan. We know this back when he first left and whatnot. And I'd be surprised if, in light of the news, they hadn't reached out again. But ultimately, WWE can't give Daniel Bryan what he's seeking, and that is the opportunity to have these dream matches, to go to Japan, to do all the things that he's talked about doing for so long. And I tell you what, there was a section of the internet for a while that was going, I'm sick of Daniel Bryan talking about it, or, you know, wouldn't he just do it then? Well, now he's going to, it looks like, and everyone can shut up because Daniel Bryan is one of the goats of his generation, and man, like, he's got another good chunk of his career left. You've got to remember, he's 40 now, just turned it in May. He had the 2 years out, retired. I know his body's been through a lot, but out through retirement, then he's had, what, a year and a half with just working one day a week, if that, because of the pandemic. It's actually been pretty good. So I feel like there's legs in Daniel Bryan at this point. Like, they're not picking up someone who's past his best in WWE, like a Mark Henry or Paul White. That's obviously, they're different kinds of recruits, right? This is a guy who's active game changer, an active main event talent. And I feel the same for Punk, who's only 2 years older. And again, it works both ways. He's been out of the ring for 7 years, but also he's been out of the ring for 7 years. So he's in good nick. He should be, certainly compared to what he was at the tail end of his WWE career, when he had the stafe and the bad elbow and all of that good stuff. So, I feel like, of course, WWE want Daniel Bryan. Who doesn't? They'd be idiots if they didn't. But at the end of the day, you know, he would have resigned if that's what he wanted to do. The AEW deal, although, you know, we're not exactly confirming, it looks as good a done deal as it could be. I mean, the only thing that looks more rock solid than that is Punk right now. Yeah. you know, the whole United Center deal convinced me that that was happening. But we think Arthur Ashe is Daniel Bryan, right? So, man, AEW have got their house in order. I don't think WWE in a position at this stage to reel anyone back in if they wanted to.
Yeah, I think it's at the point where, you know, like you said, they are not giving him what he wants. He wants to go out and, you know, travel the world, go to Japan, have those big matches. Of course, there is the subsection of the wrestling community that still believe that WWE was still in talks with New Japan and trying to work that deal. I think pretty much when that report came out, it was, that was the moment that it was good as dead. Like, I feel like as soon as I heard that report, and it was a whirlwind on social media, like immediately after we had the Tony Khan promo where he just said he's the only Khan in professional wrestling, not the Khan man in Connecticut. Then you've had all the matches with the IWGP United States Championship on AEW Dynamite. You have John Moxley, who, when he originally signed with AEW, he had a clause in his contract that said you can perform for New Japan, but only in Japan. He couldn't even show up for a press conference for the 2019 G1 Climax in Dallas, Texas. Now he's one of the headline names on the New Japan Pro Wrestling Resurgence show on, I believe it's Saturday. So, yeah, like this is a big wide open sign by AEW saying, like, WWE is not in business with New Japan. We are in business with New Japan. And I know there's also a subsection of fans, the more optimistic WWE fans, that's like, oh, they could still be in business with AEW, and WWE would still work with New Japan. We have about 40 years of evidence that says WWE wouldn't never work with New Japan if they were still in business with AEW. The main thing of the report that WWE was in talks with New Japan was to be the exclusive partner.
Exclusive
partner of New Japan. And if you don't know what exclusive means, it means only partner for New Japan. New Japan can't work with Impact Wrestling. New Japan can't work with AEW. New Japan can't do a lot of the things that they would want to do. And probably if WWE had an event in California, they wouldn't have the Resurgence event on Saturday. If WWE had a California event in this month, New Japan probably wouldn't even be able to go to LA this month. So all of this points to AEW being in partnership with New Japan, not WWE, which more lends into the fact that Daniel Bryan is heading to AEW.
Yeah, I think it's almost a given. Sam Chris says here, Bryan wanted to stay home and be a father instead of signing for WWE. Didn't he want that? Yeah, he absolutely did. He said that on the record, not just to me, but in other interviews as well. And, you know, he's done that for, you know, what is it, 4 months now? He's been able to do that. But by the time Arthur Ashe comes along, it's 5 months. And you have to imagine as well, WWE are back on the road now. But, you know, I was listening to JR's podcast today. AEW is like a one shot a week. You know, if you're Sting, for instance, just to use him as a more example than the other signings they've made of the similar ilk, you know, it's a one day a week work for Daniel Bryan. He can still be a very present father and kind of take a day and a half traveling in and out and the show to be the performer still and make great money. I mean, it's a bit of a no-brainer if you want that balance in life, whereas with WWE there are so many more commitments. So I think he's had a great time doing that, and you know, he's looking at, I mean, the kids are going to be starting school. I think it's his eldest certainly is anyway. I don't know what the younger one will be doing, but I know they've talked about Bree. Maybe we'll have a return to WWE next year, he said, with Nikki. And, you know, he's not just going to sit around and waste away what's left of his prime. And in my opinion, being 40 in the wrestling business is prime. Like that, yeah, and in this day and age, it really is. So I do think that AEW is more of a lock. And I think both things can be true. He wants to have his dream matches, but he also wants to be there for his family. And the one place that that can be true is AEW. So, you know, you have to really take all of that into account, I do think.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I do want to say this, SB3, because we mentioned this earlier. I don't want to retread it too much because I spoke about it at length on the show yesterday, and I mean at length. But I know you didn't get to talk about it with me or have a rebuttal or anything, and you did have some opinions on Triple H and who's really to blame for the fall, or you know, the not the fall of NXT, but certainly the miscalculations and the seeming restructure that is on the way. I obviously made the point that I felt like Triple H had more than delivered talent that have come through NXT ready to make an impact on the main roster. I stand by that. You had some counter comments, I do believe.
I just feel that Triple H gets a pass from a lot of professional wrestling fans. And I don't think that, you know, yeah, you could say he's developed guys like a Baron Corbin or like a Braun Strowman, Alexa Bliss, Charlotte Flair. The Four Horsewomen are definitely a credit and something that Triple H can put his legacy on, that he helped develop them into stars that has translated to the main roster. But when you look at, I would say maybe 70-75% of the stars that came into NXT, they could have went straight to the main roster and they would be ready-made stars. It wasn't anything that Triple H did. He gave them a platform to perform underneath the WWE umbrella, but I can't credit Triple H for a Kevin Owens or a Sami Zayn. Yes,
you can a bit. You can a bit for WWE audience. Of course you can. They would have been totally different had they gone straight to Vince McMahon. I don't know how you can't see that. That, like, if you say that these people would come straight into WWE, I mean, first of all, they wouldn't have come into WWE, right? Like, that's one thing.
He deserves credit for hiring them. I will give him that.
And this is what I'm saying. I didn't say he developed them. I didn't say he developed them. I said that he gave the main roster a lot of talent, right? Okay. A lot of people came through NXT that the main roster should have made more of. You know, literally, I don't care who it is. Nobody can sit here and convince me that Vince wasn't given enough talent out of NXT. It doesn't matter that it's semantics who developed it or not. I've said this openly, that I don't feel like, you know, the PC for everything that it cost and whatnot, like, it hasn't developed nearly enough. We all know that. They should have had more homegrown talent. And there are examples of people that, you know, Triple H is either you know, like repackaged or developed. I mean, you know, that have come through NXT. I mean, some of them kind of stray into FCW as well. But
I mean, the two, Baron Corbin, Braun Strowman, Alexa Bliss, like he could take credit for really.
Carmella, I guess. Like
Carmella's, you know, another one. Yeah.
There's a few wrestlers out there who for sure didn't really have the background on the appendant, you know, the Kevin Owens and El Generico's, and, you know, we all know that they'd already done their thing, but still, yeah. And I made this point the other day, and I know that you might not take this well, being someone who watched Ring of Honor at length, but that is a small sample size market compared to the WWE landscape where we are now, right? It is. So to say it's a given, they would have just come into the main roster and, you know, been amazing and stuff. I think that the bridge of NXT was actually more important than people give it credit for. But alas, I guess we'll never truly know, because the disconnect and the alignment between NXT and main roster, I think we can all agree on that, definitely wasn't right. Like, whatever, you know, whichever way you want to look at it, Triple H didn't give Vince what Vince wanted, or Vince didn't know what to do with the great stuff that Triple H gave him. And I'm more inclined for the latter. But either way, it didn't work, sadly.
Sadly, it didn't work, and changes is a coming. And I've made this statement, and I know we did a poll on the community tab for what we're going to debate tonight. But I really wanted to debate what type of changes I would put to NXT, because I believe it should revert back to the 1980s. This is what Vince McMahon wants. You remember the 1980s? You had in the main event scene your Hulk Hogan's, your Ultimate Warriors. You had your big guys like Andre the Giant, King Kong Bundy. And then the Intercontinental title scene was the workhorses. You had your Macho Man Randy Savage. Then that generation moved on. It went to Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect. They need to model NXT after that. You put your Johnny Gargano's, your Roderick Strong's, your Kushida's in the Cruiserweight and the North American titles, and those are your workhorses. The NXT championship, whether we believe it or not, has already made that transition, because the transition point is Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross is not your prototypical NXT champion of the last couple of years. He's not your Finn Balor's. He's not your Neville's. He's not your Adam Cole's. He's not your Johnny Gargano's. He's not your Tommaso Ciampa. He's a character. He's a big guy. He's a guy that can be that launching point to making it more about the big men and about the stars that Vince is going to look at as a star that he probably will 50-50 book in about 3 weeks.
Well, but, it already is. But I mean, he's not Hogan either, or Andre, or Alex, or Rock.
He's more akin to an Ultimate Warrior. He's got the entrance. Sure. He's got the character. He's somewhat Mark Merrill. Mark Merrill meets Ultimate Warrior. That would be my analogy for Karrion Kross. Like, he's a bigger guy, and then you basically form that into it. I'm not here to give you guys a bad take, but I'm, like I said, I always try to put on my Vince hat and try to look at it in his eyes. And maybe it should be the Odyssey Jones, the Duke Hudsons that are in the NXT championship place, because you can have, you know, certain smaller guys that are charismatic move up into the NXT championship division. I've been a big advocate for Cameron Grimes. He's the type of guy that I can see breaking through and getting a big win on one of these big guys. But I think that the majority of the guys that you put into that main event scene should be guys that are going to translate, that Vince sees as stars now that they're making this transition.
I understand that point. I really do. And I think, you know, you're spot on in terms of where they're going. I just think, and this is a whole nother thing, that Vince needs to update his opinion on wrestling. Because I just don't believe that it is, you know, oh, we've got the Great Khali, let's put the belt on the Great Khali. I think AEW is a great example of this, that great wrestling is what should be at the top of the card, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be. And it's amazing when a Brock Lesnar comes along or someone like that, right? We all know that. 6'3", 270, and they're like athletic as hell. Those are obviously the gold standard. The Rock is like 6'5", 270, right? Yeah. Obviously, if you have those guys, amazing. But I don't think you just look at every big guy and go, oh God, you know, let's see what we can do with this. That blueprint to me, I feel like it should be the talent as opposed to the outer shell. Whereas WWE are thinking, okay, if I have someone who's big, we can teach them the rest. And yeah, I said, you look at the top, let's say 20 wrestlers in AEW, I don't know how many are over 6'2".
No, it's or, very rare.
Or even how many of them are like enormous. You've got guys that are like, you know, like Moxley is obviously, you know, like in shape. Or, you know, you've got guys who obviously are in good nick. But I mean, are there any Bobby Lashley's there? No. But that, does that detract from anything? No. Like, that's kind of my point. This whole, we got to go back to the drawing board here and go back to what worked. It always has worked. I just think there's evidence out there to suggest, actually, there's a lot of people that would like to see that part of the industry. Like, that's all I was trying
100%.
To say.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I'm one of the people, like I said, I grew – Ring of Honor, TNA, that those promotions in like 2003, 2004 kept me being a wrestling fan. If it wasn't for those promotions, I probably would not be on your YouTube screen right now, because I would have moved on for professional wrestling in my high school years. But those, the work rate type of promotions, kept me with it. So I definitely agree with you that it's not about size anymore. But if this is what Vince wants, this is what Vince is going to get. And if it makes a smoother transition where we don't have the heartbreak of a Shinsuke Nakamura keeping some of his aura from a New Japan Pro Wrestling as he's in NXT and then getting called up to the main roster and then feeling like his talents have been squandered, or the Revival being one of the best tag teams in the world and then coming to the main roster and they're shaving each other's backs. Like, this is the stuff that really makes you lose some of that joy of watching wrestling, is seeing someone that you had high hopes for, you see him in NXT, and it really hurt what was the pattern. And I love that you quoted that article by Voices of Wrestling, because they made very good points that no one got stale, no one got dry in NXT, because it was a whole pattern. You watch them come in, you have the excitement of them coming in, and then it's the journey to their big win. Not everybody's going to get the big win to win the NXT championship. Some guys come together with somebody else. They win the tag team titles. Somebody else wins the North American championship. But then when they lose the title, they move on to the main roster and someone else comes in to fill those spots. And it was a great pattern, a great formula to success for NXT. But now that the door is wide open, the forbidden door is open in AEW, in Impact Wrestling, in New Japan, there is more options for people. If you don't want to just be, if you're not under the illusion of, I got to go to WWE to be a success, you can be a success anywhere in the world now. So and now it's not, they don't have the influx of talent that they did 2, 3, 4 years ago. So it's kind of hurt that formula. And as well, we've seen how transitions to the main roster has hurt people, and they kind of lose their love for professional wrestling as well. It's not just us fans, it's them, because they see how it is in NXT and then it's totally different on the main roster.
You know, it's funny, because what used to be NXT's strength was the constant replenishment of stock over the hour show. Then when they went head-to-head with AEW and it became a two-hour show, that was one of their weaknesses, because AEW was just adding and adding and adding to their roster, whereas NXT were like, and we have to let go of this guy, we have to let go of this, you know, Keith Lee, whatever. Like, it's weird how that worked out. But I will say this as well. Upton Avondale says, 8-year-olds are famously open to change. He's 76 at the end of the month, Avondale. He's got 4 years till he gets to that stubborn 80. it is definitely interesting when you think about it like that, and the way that it's all broken down, and obviously the way that, I guess, is the mindsets that they have now. And Vince thinks, I've been very successful doing what I've done, and it's very hard to say that. I will say this. We're talking about homegrown, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but Chad Gable and Jason Jordan were homegrown.
Yes,
and I had immense hopes for Jason Jordan. Like, it's such a shame that he's not like the poster boy of what the PC could have been, because he, in my opinion, had everything. Like, in the ring, he was immense. He looked immense. I know his charisma like wasn't amazing, but he had that kind of physical charisma in the ring, like where his matches were interesting as a result. And obviously he was just finding his legs and the Kurt Angle stuff. And then of course he got the bad neck injury, man. Like, that's a shame. And Chad Gable, I use that as an example because I know people will go, oh, well, yeah, what's he doing? If he left WWE tomorrow, he would have a great career. Like, he could go to Japan, he could go to AEW, and he would kill it. That man could put on clinics with anyone. I'll say this right now, like Pete Dunne, Zack Sabre Jr., Daniel Bryan, and all of those names, whatever. Chad Gable is one of the best mat wrestlers in the world. I would stand by that. He could mat wrestle with anyone. Some of the stuff he used to do in NXT, I was just like mind blown. He was just like, I was just on the regular show with what Jordan and Gable were doing, American Alpha. And I was like, oh my God, he's so, so good. And he just doesn't get a chance enough to show it on the main roster. And when he does, typically, funnily enough, all of us are going, wow, he's good, isn't he? Like, you know, Twitter are like, wow, Gable's really good. But it doesn't ever last, which is the fundamental problem. That probably should lead us into NXT. Yeah. SP3. Let's talk about this at the top, as in like the main event. So we learned that we were going to get Pete Dunne, Ilya Dragunov. Now, obviously, NXT UK guy over here, that's a big deal. You know, they tagged together a little bit when the pandemic was easing up over here, and they did the thing with Volta. But in terms of the booking, now, I know there's a lot of people that are like, hang on a minute, Ilya Dragunov, and many people think Dragunov's kind of primed to win.
Yeah.
If you look at the arc of the story, right? Now, I know there's a lot of people who don't watch NXT UK, so I'm going to give you a brief rundown. He basically has been like battling all these mental demons. He was really doubting himself, very like his emotions got on top of him, and he's kind of had to find himself since the grueling first duel with Volta. He's kind of come back around. He picked up the massive win in a triple threat. And then here we are. We're back at the match again. He's found the strength. He's found the belief again, which is meant to be like the momentous overcoming of what the first defeat did to him. So from a storyline perspective, a lot of people were looking at it going, well, really, it would make sense if Ilya is the guy. And also from an NXT UK perspective, he probably is the guy. If you're going to put the NXT UK title on someone, it probably is him. He loses to Pete Dunne on NXT. Now, I'm not going to sit here and condemn it too much because I love Pete Dunne. But from a logic standpoint, I'm absolutely open to hearing SB3 why it's a silly move.
It was just dumb. Like, this guy is versing the 800-plus day UK champion that is undefeated in singles competition, that beat the ever-living hell out of him 10 months ago. They're building this up when he comes out. This is 10 months in the making. This is one of the biggest matches in NXT UK history, and it's very rare that we have a NXT UK championship matchup on a takeover. The last two times was Volta versus Tommaso Ciampa, one of the greatest NXT champions of all time, and Volta versus Pete Dunne at NXT TakeOver New York, which was the two greatest UK champions going head-to-head, where Volta won the title 2 years ago. So you gotta build this guy up. And I understand, you know, Pete Dunne, they're probably grooming to be the first challenger for whoever comes out of between Karrion Kross and Samoa Joe. I'm leaning towards Samoa Joe, like most, especially Alex. But but at the end of the day, Pete Dunne will get over a loss to Ilya Dragunov.
Yeah, he would have.
Especially if it's like by a roll-up or it seems pretty lucky. And this whole booking just didn't make any sense. Like, why book the match to begin with if you're going to have him lose? And I know there's going to be the WWE NXT apologist that be like, oh no, he was distracted. He looks like a dummy then. Why is he getting distracted when he's in the ring with the guy that held that same title for 685 days? Like, this would have been a statement win for him. So it didn't make any sense. If you're going to book this match and you even think that Pete Dunne should win, then don't book the match. Don't book the match. Make it a tag team match. Make it Pete Dunne and Oney Lorcan versus Ilya Dragunov and someone else if you have to. But yeah, I was so baffled by that move.
Let me pitch this to you quick. Is there a line of thought that Pete Dunne's contract is expiring?
That's
and
what I was thinking.
And WWE are trying their best to keep a hold of Peter.
They were like, yeah, we're going to give you this win. You see, we're high.
We love you, Pete.
We love you, Pete. We're going to have you beat the future NXT UK champion.
I honestly don't think, by the way, that Pete Dunne would appreciate that booking. Knowing Pete, I don't know him, but from having spoken to him, the times that I have, he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that'd be like, yeah, just give me wins to keep me happy. He's very much about the wrestling. So I can't imagine, unless this was going somewhere, that he would have been over the moon about it. Now, of course, there are ways it can go. Pete Dunne picks up the win. What's he moving on to next? There's been a lot of Samoa Joe teases. So it might be a case of keeping him strong. Samoa Joe beats Karrion Kross, Pete Dunne, Samoa Joe. I still wouldn't have liked it because I think Pete could have took the loss here. I get that he's the heel, so why would you just... But, you know, he's in enough he's called enough people out in NXT. You could have had him distracted by someone.
Ciampa and Thatcher. He's feuding with Ciampa and Thatcher. Like, instead of just doing the promo where Thatcher challenges Ridge Holland, they come out and they distract him. Or when Walter comes out to distract Ilya Dragunov, they attack Walter from behind. You could have made this a bigger match for next week, where it's Ilya Dragunov and Ciampa and Thatcher versus Holland, Pete Dunne, and Oney Lorcan, or replace Oney Lorcan with Walter. You could have stretched this out to make it a 2-week story, and at the same time, you're giving Ilya Dragunov a credibility win against the former longest reigning NXT UK champion, so people have more confidence that Walter is going to win. Now, if he beats Walter at TakeOver, I feel like it's a little bit lesser, no matter how great the match is. Him taking a loss like 10 days before hurts his credibility.
Right. The other line of thinking is that they're heading to a triple threat. I also would doubt that, but I guess there would be some merit if you are going to make Ilya that he beats them both, like the two longest reigning ever. Like, I guess on paper that sounds amazing, but I also think like there is value in running it back the same way, like, you know, Sasha and Bianca should just be run back. So should this, you know, you let it. Come on. It was such an amazing first match. You don't mess with the formula. You let them run it back. When you factor all of that into it, it then becomes very hard for me to then make a justification of like, okay, well, I could see what they were doing or where this was going. I guess we're going to have to see what next week holds. Probably nothing. But again, you have to hold out some hope. If it is in the case that Pete Dunne's contract ends in September, where are they heading with him then? Because presumably, I mean, if it is still up in the air, they don't know, or he hasn't, you know, given them an indication, and they are just thinking, well, God, you know, we just need to book him strong. I mean, I can't imagine it is that, but let's just say that it is. Have WWE not learnt lessons? Like, he should be putting people over on the way out then. Like, you know, you can't let him hold you to ransom, can you? But here we are. He's getting massive victories only a month out. Not even that. 3 weeks out from departing the company, potentially, it should be worth saying. So I think the whole situation is very strange. Like, it's very hard to get your head around because there are so many moving parts that we don't really... Like, the only thing that we do know is Cole and O'Reilly is heading for that third match. We're almost certain O'Reilly goes over. Like, it's literally 99% sure that O'Reilly is going over. We know the story that's being told there. Moving on to that, what did you make of the three matches they picked? I guess the wrestling part makes sense for Kyle O'Reilly at least.
Yeah, that made sense. I just don't understand why we can have Hell in a Cell, but we can't call this Three Stages of Hell. I don't understand why they feel, because they did this with Cole and Gargano, and they also called it a 2 out of 3 falls match. When they first in a 2 out of 3 falls match in New York, then they did a 3 stages of hell in Toronto, but still called it 2 out of 3 falls. And now they're calling this 2 out of 3 falls when you have stipulations for each fall. It's 3 stages of hell. Just
didn't, I might be way off here. Like, this is just my mind, you know. Did not Cena not have this with Ryback, and they actually did call it 3 stages of hell?
I believe so. I believe that is the last time. Yeah, like after, WrestleMania 29, after he beat The Rock in Twice in a Lifetime. Yeah, he feuded with Ryback, and they had like a 3 stages of hell. And that's like, seems like it was the last time we could have a match called 3 stages of hell.
Nearly 10 years ago. Like, 10
years ago. I thought it was Triple H and Randy Orton, I think, at the Bash 2009 was the last time. But you are right. I think they did do like that stipulation, 2 out of 3 falls.
I'm sure they called it that. I vaguely recall a John Cena energetic promo, like, 3 stages of hell. You know, I don't know. Either way, you know, I guess it's the best for everyone at this point, isn't it, to wrap this story up? Like, everybody knows what's going on with Adam Cole, whether you buy into the fact that he might be staying, he's had positive talks, or he's going to let his contract go. I'm invested just because I know it'll be good. But, you know, I still think that the whole composition of this feud has been difficult. Like, they've gone with, they started with the match that should have been much, you know, either the second or last, the whole 40, you know, 50 minute epic that they had. You know, it's the same way I feel like Inner Circle and Pinnacle, really, starting with Blood and Guts was a choice as well. But
they,
you know,
were able to kind of recover from that. Like, I feel like
branched out. It's okay.
I feel like since Double or Nothing, it's been better than it was. But like, they still haven't really recovered from giving us the 45-minute unsanctioned match at Stand and Deliver.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. That was like a route to go. But anyway, anything else you want to pick up from NXT? Because all I'll say is that I'm delighted to see Odyssey Jones in the final.
Yes.
I had said I think Carmelo Hayes, but looking at the size of Duke Hudson and the new remits, I might change my mind. But it's still, Carmelo Hayes is a hell of a talent. I do think the rocket is on Odyssey Jones. I hope it is, in a way. But I believe he's still actually pretty green from what people tell me. Like, he's not that experienced. Yeah. So I don't know if I want him to be like thrust into the fire, but he's got a hell of a lot of charisma. Good to see Saray's alive and having matches. You know, Dakota picking up victories here, but she can't on main event against Aaliyah. There's just a lot going on, SP3.
Well, let me just say, like, Saray is someone that, you know, they hyped up as, oh, this is the next generation. We've had Asuka, we've had Kairi Sane, we had Io Shirai. Now the latest star from Japan is Saray, and she's literally done nothing. I think that they are trying to compete with Saray and Taya Valkyrie, aka Frankie Monet, for who they have done less with since coming to NXT. Like, they, at least she has a story though. Like, Saray is just being used randomly. She's supposed to verse Ember Moon. I would guess that she was going to beat Ember Moon, and that would have been like the biggest win of her NXT career so far. But instead, she versus Dakota Kai, and she gets her first loss against Kai. I thought it was a fun way to start the show. It was a good opener, but that was about it. Like, it feels like Saray is very directionless. Outside of that, the things that stood out to me was the good promo with LA Knight, Ted DiBiase, and Cameron Grimes to set up the match at TakeOver. I actually enjoyed the skits with Index, even though this story seems to be going in reverse. Like, they lost a lover or loser match, and now they're going out on a date. It feels like this should have happened a few weeks ago to lead up to the lover or loser match, and that should have been like maybe on next week's show if they weren't going to do it at TakeOver. But it was very humorous. Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae just working this role. I like Johnny Gargano playing Martin Lawrence in Bad Boys 2 to Dexter Loomis. That was a fun little...
Yeah. We can't repeat that skit, but sure, yeah.
No, you can't. You can't.
Who that is? He's 30. At least 30.
That's gonna be me and Alex at when Harper gets a date a few years. or when Harlem gets a date in a few, like 20 years.
Chitty bang bang.
The Daily Boys. The Daily Boys. Yeah. Watch out, all the youngsters. The Daily Boys gonna be at the front door waiting.
Don't come around here. Don't do it.
But I thought that was fun and definitely an upgrade from what we saw last week with Io Shirai and Zoe Starks as far as like skits on NXT. I know the bar was low.
Yeah, even Jeremy Brash couldn't save that.
Correction to I see Anika here saying, well, Three Stages of Hell is no holds barred street fight and cage match. No, the first Three Stages of Hell was Austin versus Triple H. The first match was straight up, the second match was a street fight, and the third match was a cage match. So that's basically what they're doing here, and they're not calling it a Three Stages of Hell.
I wonder if they'll do it like that, because Austin won the straight up. Yeah. And that was the whole thing at that point. I love it how me and SP3, we're like encyclopedic in this very small part of WWE. because the whole thing was he's the game, he's the best in the world. And of course, Austin beats him straight up, and everyone was like, oh, but then Triple H gets the next fall, and Triple H actually won it, which people don't remember much because Austin was going up to Mania 17. No one really cared. Everyone was like, oh, well, you know, it's fine, he's gonna meet The Rock. All right,
and they should have set him up to be the first challenger for Austin instead of the heel turn that went wrong, like, and then them teaming up with each other the day after WrestleMania.
Yeah. I mean, but- I will say this, like, the two men power trip makes no sense, but I still liked it. I was still watching it, that them just literally tear the shit out of everyone every week. The Hardy Boys got destroyed about 3 weeks in a row. Remember that one where Lita is just getting beaten the shit out of? The only payoff was that Jeff Hardy won the Intercontinental title for like a day. That was the payoff for Lita getting beaten the crap out of. Good times. I still wish I knew where that story was going. I wish I'd asked Triple H that. I wish I'd known. But anyway, I wonder if they're doing the same here. Will Adam Cole beat Kyle O'Reilly in the straight up part?
Maybe. He did beat him at Great American Bash, and that was the whole point why O'Reilly wanted the straight up match first. So we'll see.
Exactly.
We'll see. I think it's going
to
be great.
But why does he want it again? It just makes no sense. Anyway, I guess to right the wrong, I'll talk myself into it. What I will say here is everybody, get your Ultra Chats in before the end of the show. If you want SP3 and I to divulge and get into what you have to say, you know what to do, wrestletalk.com/wrestlingdaily. While you're here, thumbs up, subscribe, help us get towards our 15K. We're on the road to 12 and a half right now. And of course, we need to get to War Games win on Quizzlemania. And there will be a Quizzlemania tonight. With that, SB3, what was our debate tonight?
So the winner of our poll, and I want to say thank you to everyone who's been supporting these polls. It's a nice way of gauging our audience, and you guys let us know what you want us to debate. It was actually Alex's idea for this one. I always ask Alex, like, the morning of Wednesday.
Yeah, we're gonna work on. And he comes at me with, like, come on, man, come up with some ideas. I'm like,
I've always got like two in my head, but I'm just like, oh, let me get his input. But yes, he suggested we predict the next champions for AEW. So I want to put a little twist on this, because I feel like when it comes to the AEW World Championship, we're kind of on the same thinking, like most of the world, where we want that cowboy S word. I won't add to the swear jar for today. But
it's open.
I think that we can predict the next, when we get to there, we'll just do
after
one
page.
Segment.
Okay.
We'll
okay.
go for after page. I would say maybe the next two or three after page, who we think the lineage will be, and what's been a very good lineage for the AEW World Championship. Oh, but
very good.
Let's start with the TNT Championship first. The Redeemer, God's favorite champion, Miro. Who do you, Alex, think will be next champion?
Oh my God. It's so hard to predict who's going to beat Miro. He's like unstoppable right now. Would have to be a big bullish bastard. See, the thing is, like, in WWE, they'd have, like, Kalisto beat him. Who did Kalisto win the title from? Like, was it him? I can't remember. He won it from someone. He might have won the US title from Rusev. Something like that. I'm sure he did.
No, I think he won it from Alberto, and then Rusev won it from him.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Either way, I recall some dumpster matches and shit. Maybe they're not in the company yet, but if I was to make a prediction of who would beat him, and you look at the big guys around him, like maybe like a Powerhouse Hobbs would be a good one. Like that'd be his first like push into the mainstream. I think Jungle Boy would be a really good shout. That'd be his first like real overcoming the odds in a big time situation. Like I could buy Jungle Boy beating him. I think probably the top three for me are Powerhouse Hobbs, Malakai Black. That'd be a great way for him to get rolling as well. And Jungle Boy. man. All three of them are really good picks. Like, and I could make cases for all three of them. Like, Powerhouse Hobbs needs to assert himself somewhere at some point. Like, do you know, he's like fifth in the world title rankings.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this. He's like fifth because he just keeps picking up W's. That'd be a good way to have him kind of, you know, keep building up and keep building. Same for Jungle Boy. You can't have him in that world title picture, I don't think, in the next couple of years, particularly if Punk and Brian are coming in. But he is still moving in the right direction. And overcoming someone like Miro would be good, not just great for him, but Miro, I think it's, you know, he could really help someone. And at the same time, the fans wouldn't, like, think it's killed him either. So there's that. And Malakai Black, you know, again, same thing. I think House of Black is going to be a big deal. I think he's obviously had a great start to life in AEW. And the only thing with that is that you have to kind of keep it cooking, right? That's the thing. Great angle that they found with Cody. But how do you keep him simmering along without injecting him into whatever picture? So I think the TNT title actually could be a really good one. What about you?
Since you got three, I'll put my three out there. The one I do definitely agree with when I first heard TNT Championship, and based on the matches that we have seen from Miro, outside of Lance Archer, he's beaten Dante Martin, he's beaten Brian Pillman Jr., and he's beaten Lee Johnson. And I've been loving his selling, by the way, because it's very much akin to the Stone Pit Bull, Tomohiro Ishii, in that he sells like a video game boss. And if you played the old school video games, you need to kick them like three or four times before that bar goes down just a little bit. And that's how Miro sells. He, like the DDT that Lee Johnson did on him last week on Dynamite, where he just sat up and it looked like he was going to no-sell, and then he just drops down to one knee and then stumbles. That was one of the best sells that I've seen in AEW. And that's what I think that he needs, like that underdog to finally overcome him. So Jungle Boy makes a whole lot of sense because he's all been about, you know, just coming up short in these big matches, whether it was, you know, making the time limit draw with Chris Jericho, pushing Kenny Omega to the limit. This would feel like the big moment for him. So definitely Jungle Boy's in my top three. I would also say Sammy Guevara, because they've been really pushing him underneath.
Babyface Sammy has been firing.
Underneath the surface, they've been really pushing him in a big way, and that would feel like a big moment for him and a big title win. And I like how the TNT Championship, it feels like a heavyweight championship when somebody wins it. It felt like that when Miro won it. It felt like that when Darby Allin won it. It felt like that when Brody Lee won it. So like a Jungle Boy or a Sammy Guevara, it would feel in that same light. And then if you're thinking about like horses to go up against them, you say Powerhouse Hop, I think Brian Cage. Brian Cage can finally finish his feud with Ricky Starks and then pull a Lucha Underground and rip the FTW title and say, I'm going after the real gold and I want Miro for the TNT Championship.
I don't think there's any wrong answers there. I would love to see Sammy as a real contender to Miro. I think I'd like to see him be a contender on pay-per-view and lose. Like, I'd like Miro to get a W, because I just think it wouldn't hurt either of them, but it would be an amazing match. So that's my feeling there. Let's talk about the women's title. This is a tough one because Britt Baker is the right champion, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to see anyone have it off her right now. She's in like peak of her powers as the champion. It's where everyone wanted her to be. You got Thunder Rosa at the top of the rankings at the moment, right? We know that Red Velvet's about to get shot, but we also know that Red Velvet's not going to win. The way I'm approaching this is that you don't not do Rosa and Britt Baker. Like, the feud is there. Yeah. Of course you do Britt Baker and Rosa. It's a difficult one because I think Baker is so over now that, like, the big win for Rosa, I don't know, right? Like, not that I don't want to see Rosa as the champ or anything. Like, I do, and there's also a part of me that wants to see Tay Conti ascend to, like, a... Because I feel like the crowd would really get behind her if she did, and obviously Yuka Sakazaki should win everything ever. But I do think it's Jade Cargill. I think Britt Baker has a long run to the end of this year, perhaps early next year, and Jade Cargill's the person. She is, and I've said this before, And I don't care if people don't like it or not. By the way, someone's put Chris Statlander in the chat. She's unbeaten. Does anyone know that?
Yes,
she's like, she's like 16-0 or something in AEW.
And people don't remember that Britt was in the match where she got injured. So they have a ready-made. There's a few of them that have ready-made stories with Britt, but I definitely agree with you. Jade Cargill has to be in the discussion.
She's the Brock Lesnar SP3. She is. She is like that special once in a generation athlete. Like, look at her, man. Like, if you turn on the TV, I've said this before, you turn on the TV, never seen her before. It's like, oh my God, who is that? Right? She has that. And she's delivered in the ring thus far. You let her keep getting the reps in. I'm telling you, you go to the moon with someone like that. You do.
I've been really critical of AEW's booking of the women's world championship since Double or Nothing, since Britt won. And it's not really, them not putting enough focus on the women. I just haven't liked the timing of the challengers. Like, I felt like Nyla Rose would have been perfect for Pittsburgh. Like, Pittsburgh, you know Britt Baker is going to be the babyface. So I don't understand why Red Velvet, an underdog babyface, is her challenger there. That didn't make sense. She should have been the first challenger for Britt right out of Double or Nothing. Or one of my picks for the next AEW Women's World Champion is someone that had a feud that put both of them over at the time. It's done more for Britt in the long term than it did for her, but she beat her in that feud. And I'm talking about Big Swole. Big Swole beat her in the tooth and nail match. They got both of them over when Britt was injured in the summer during that whole feud. And they really haven't done much with Big Swole. They've had her, in her little feud with Diamante on AEW Dark Elevation.
She was injured for a bit, right? I think she was injured a bit last year.
I think she was. She was hurt for a bit, but I just feel like they should be doing more with her. And she would have been a very logical first challenger for her. Like, she could have came out and be like, Britt, you forgot about me. Like, I've had my beef with you. Like, and I beat you in your own home turf, in your dentist's office. So I should be the first challenger for the AEW Women's World Championship. So I feel like she should be in the conversation. Chris Statlander, like you said, is undefeated. But you know me. I voted for her for the Women's Wrestler of the Year last year. I'm a Thunder Rosa guy. Thunder Rosa. Yeah. But I think that it shouldn't be in the first time. I think the first match between them should be at All Out. And I think Britt should win there. But it should be a very close matchup, because then Britt can kind of be like, I'm 2-0 against you, Thunder Rosa, because the one time you beat me, it was unsanctioned.
It doesn't count.
So I'm 2-0. And do you want to? And then, they have a rematch, and she could be like, I'm going to make it 3-0 against you. And then that's where Thunder Rosa kind of finally beats her. And then they're really 2-2, and you can have another big matchup down the line. So this should be a feud that stretches out for a year or maybe 18 months, because these two women just have a once in a lifetime type of chemistry. They're really like AEW's answer to Sasha and Bayley in the way that match was received this year. I feel like they can do a lot of great things together.
I love Thunder Rosa. This is well documented. I think she's awesome. I just feel like if you're making Jade Cargill, which should be a priority,
yes,
Britt is the person you beat. Right. Like, it would mean more.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, like, mean more talent wise, just Britt is so over.
I do agree.
I think Jade's maybe the one. The tag titles. Let's make a pit stop here before the world title. This is a tougher one to kind of get into. I would have loved Moxley and Kingston. I don't think it's going to happen now, but I would have loved that at the time. I thought that was the one. I don't know if you can do Sting and Darby, but I would take it.
I like the way you think, sir.
Yeah. I made this clear on Twitter. I was loving the stable of those four. But looking at the rankings and the landscape, like Jungle Express are the number one contenders, I think, in the rankings. FTR are still lingering, and they haven't really sewn that story up. Like, just I never bought that it was just gonna be one match, but
no.
If we're looking to do something with someone, it's got to be Pride and Powerful, isn't it? It has to be. Like, they are overdue the chance, are they not?
I think that they haven't really built one contender for All Out. So I think that they should move the Proud and Powerful FTR story into the title picture. We haven't really had a three-way tag team title match since Full Gear in 2019. So this seems like it would be the perfect time to do that, because you're not going to give Varsity Blondes the title shot on pay-per-view. Jurassic Express, that has more tangibility to it because they did verse the Young Bucks last year at All Out, but they lost to the Young Bucks there. So there is kind of a story that they can kind of pick back up. And I love that about AEW, that losses and the history that the two teams or two people have, it plays out. Yeah, it matters. Mm. And they want you to remember it, unlike other companies that insult your intelligence and think you don't remember. But, you know, They appreciate that. And I think for Proud and Powerful to get this shot there in Chicago, it makes a whole lot of sense, because that was where they debuted in 2019. I was there live and I saw them debut. I saw them come out with the dead president's mask, and I knew who it was, because I was like, they walking like New Yorkers. That's how New Yorkers walk in the building. So I knew it was Santana and Ortiz. So I think it should be Santana and Ortiz versus FTR versus the Young Bucks. Put a ladder in there. I wouldn't mind that at all. That would be a match of the year candidate right there.
Show stealer.
Show stealer for sure. So
I think Proud and Powerful need the moment. I do.
Yeah. I think they need the moment. And then you can easily do FTR beats them for the titles to get the titles back. Eventually, you know, during FTR's reign, maybe the Young Bucks will be back to babyface again, and you could run that match back. So I think it should be probably Proud and Powerful, then FTR, and then maybe even Jurassic Express. If Jungle Boy doesn't have his moment with the TNT Championship, maybe it's the tag team gold.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, I don't know where Death Triangle fit in either, but I would have loved to have seen them in the picture.
Yeah.
I just feel like out of everyone, like if you ask me who should be the next champions, I would go Proud and Powerful, Santana, Ortiz. They've been unsung heroes, in my opinion, during their run. And they've kind of played a background to the more grander Inner Circle Jericho run. I feel like it's time for them to have the bangers that I know they can. You know, there's a theory out there that Hangman Page might be joined by a certain Adam Cole against the Elite, but I don't know. I could buy that Hangman Page does challenge them at All Out. I could definitely buy it, but I have no idea what direction they're going to go with that. Let's, you know, Hangman Page, great segue. I know we've only got a couple of minutes left. I think we're all in agreement that he needs to be the guy that beats Kenny Omega. But then after him, you've got a lot of options now, presuming that Punk, Brian, and Cole, at least the first two, are AEW bound. It's like, wow, okay, how do you fix all that in? I will still, controversially, maintain my original point here. Hangman should be beaten by MJF. MJF should be beaten by Wardlow. I said it. Wardlow should be that story. He's going to be made tonight against Jericho. I believe that the rest can wait. You can find stories for Punk and Brian in the interim. And I think you can find amazing stories of the rest of the talent that's on the roster, be it Moxley, Omega, and everything else, right? You can keep Punk and Brian busy. And, you know, this can carry us to next summer. I don't know when Hangman Page is actually going to get the belt at this rate.
Exactly. But
let's presume he gets it by the end of the year or the first pay-per-view of next year. By the end of the year, by this time next year, we could be talking about MJF at the end of his reign or Wardlow at the beginning. And then you've got time to get the guys in. I know that maybe that's my utopia talking, where you can make guys who I do think are ripe. But I do understand those who will say, you've got Punk and Brian. So I don't know, man. Yeah. It's tough.
I'm going to say, I think we are in agreement, Tankman is next. So I'll go with the three after him. MJF. Okay. I don't agree with Wardlow, because I still feel he's still green and he has time. And I feel like MJF is not a one-time AEW world champion. He's going to win it back. And then you can eventually go to Wardlow then. But MJF, CM Punk, Darby Allin.
Ooh.
The CM Punk beats Darby Allin in his return match at All Out. And like I said, AEW wants you to remember these things. It always comes back. It always makes full circle. And Darby Allin has this new obstacle to overcome, because that was the whole thing when he won the TNT championship. It was, he never beat Cody. He had three opportunities at Cody. One was a draw. Cody beat him twice. And then the fourth time he beat Cody. You can do that and have that story of his next obstacle is beating CM Punk, who is basically, Darby is Jeff Hardy meets CM Punk, because he's straight edge. He has the look of a Jeff Hardy, and it plays in where they can have a long form story. But I feel like Punk has to win. You have to have Punk or Bryan win the AEW World Championship, because they're going to be one of your biggest stars. And I feel like Bryan is more akin to have his dream matches in AEW. CM Punk kind of needs to win the AEW World title.
Needs to reassert. Yeah, I hear you. And also, like, I think we said that MJF would be one of our top opponents for Punk. So, you know, I hadn't thought about it like that. That is a very good point. You know, that's the feud that you'd like to see happen. And what would MJF really lose by losing to Punk? No. I still think the Wardlow story is strong. And I don't think you leave it years. Right? I don't think you leave it years. Maybe you don't need the title over it, but I think that's an easy way to make Wardlow for the title. And I've said this for a while. I really do believe Wardlow is going to be one of the top players in AEW, which I know some people probably find tough to believe when you look at the sheer volume of incredible names that are going to be around that top echelon. But if you know, I think AEW have proven at this point that they're quite committed to making their own names in and around those. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Man, I hope our perfect world of AEW works out. I like all those future champions. next week we'll do the WWE version of that, heading into SummerSlam. I do believe that there are no Ultra Chats this week, which makes me sad, but understandable. We're here for the debate. But remember, guys, you can do that whenever you like. You can get involved and let us know what you think. But while you are here at the end of the show, 100-odd of you, 140-odd, thumbs up, subscribe, give us all of that good loving that will help us on our journey here on Wrestling Daily. Esme Three Man, quickly tell the people what they can expect from you this week.
You can see me over on the Distraction Patreon tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 p.m. BST, with Joseph Holbert. He's doing his own version of the Ultimate Dream Card for SummerSlam. So we're going to put together an Ultimate Dream Card. So that's going to be fun. We're going to do it better than they do it on the WWE Network. And Friday, you can see me with Dutch Mantel, Rick Uccino, over on the Sports Keto Wrestling YouTube channel with Smack Talk. And then Saturday, one of the biggest True Hill Heats yet, is going to be True Hill Heat versus The Distraction, me and Top Guy JJ versus Joseph Holbert and Jeremy Lambert in a live fantasy wrestling draft. You join us live and you'll be one of the judges, because we're going to have a in chat poll to decide who has the better roster.
Tremendous stuff. I obviously will stay busy with Talk Wrestling. That's going to be dropping tomorrow, I believe, with Jordan Grace, Jake Atlas, and Ricky Starks, which is a really great interview. I was very pleased with Ricky. Hope you guys take the time to listen to that. And I'm going to be very busy in the next kind of 10 days with WWE interviews ahead of SummerSlam. So keep your eyes peeled. There's a couple of big names in there. Winkity wink, wink. So looking forward to that. If you need us before then, you see our handles in the top corners. But for now, thank you for watching Wrestling Daily. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.